New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back. About to set it up. New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got
him. Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount+.
Yes!
Hey, y'all. It's Bud. I wanted to thank you for making Barton and Bud such a success. With your listenership, we became one of the most popular college football shows in only 8 months. But with Barton gone, we have a lot of holes to fill as a company. One of those is on the Cover 3 podcast. And I'm happy to let you know that I'll be bringing my analysis to the Cover 3 podcast, both in regular appearances and in helping to set the table behind the scenes. We'll also be taking some of your Barton and Bud mailbag questions on Cover 3 since Apple finally updated its review section. We'll be dropping some Cover 3 episodes into this feed for a while, so you can get the feel for it. But please do subscribe to Cover 3 now, because at some point in the future, this feed might get repurposed. Thanks again, guys, and hope you enjoyed the episode.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Danny Cannell, Chip Patterson, Barton Simmons, and Tom Fernelli. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Danny Cannell, that's Bud Elliott, that's Tom Fernelli, I'm Chip Patterson. You see those sirens in your feed? Emergency podcast time. We have all been just yanked out of our beds about 7 a.m. this morning, or maybe if you were real plugged in, you were on this about 11, 12 o'clock last night. But my, oh my, the speed with which Danny White has moved through this search. And you know, maybe it's because he had this phone number. You know, maybe it was starred, right? Maybe this was at the top of his favorites. Maybe it was in his recent calls, because Danny White, the new athletic director at Tennessee, has announced the next head coach for the Tennessee Volunteers. It is Josh Heupel, his former head coach from UCF. A lot of ways to break this down, but I know you've been reaching out to, I know you've got a relationship with Josh Heupel. You've been reaching out to some of your UCF sources as well. I guess, you know, Danny, you always love to have the reaction to the Vol Twitter and sort of the fan base in general. As you're taking the pulse of all the Vols for Life out there, do you think that they are having a positive reaction after hearing a James Franklin, a PJ Fleck, a lot of Power Five sitting head coaches potentially in the mix? Are you sensing a positive reaction from Tennessee fans out there?
No, absolutely not. And it should be the least surprising thing out there. You guys know I have my radio show. We take callers. And there was one caller that was like, I'm trying to keep an open mind about it, but I keep having, and this is a Tennessee fan, and just perfectly encapsulate him, but I'm tired of I already am getting UCF fans who are making fun of us because we want to get rid of them anyway. And I'm like, why do you care? Like, of course they're not going to say, man, this hurts. Like, yes, they're going to want Josh Heupel out. Of course they're going to say that now, but I get it. It doesn't surprise me at all. It's not going to be received like just yay, but I think I don't know. All these coaches hires, you know, I would say Sark, I was probably the most excited about, but even that one, like, I'm not willing to just say, I would say Danny White is probably the biggest hire that I've been, you know, pumped up about and could get behind out of any coaching hire move that's been made in this offseason. So I'm kind of like, I think it's a good hire. I think he'll bring an offense there that could be fun. And I think the game is shifting. I think that fits that mindset. But I don't, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see, like, let's wait and see what happens. But if I was a Tennessee fan, I would try to get them to support their new hire.
In the last show, we talked about what Danny White would want to do, and that would be to find somebody who could keep fan and booster interest through the coming years, which will probably be pretty tough, to lead them both, you know, through and after these tough times. And if you found that right guy, you convince him to come by giving him a contract like the Baylor contract for Matt Rhule or the Michigan State contract for Mel Tucker, you know, 7 years guaranteed, plus, you know, escalators that basically, if you get hit with sanctions, your contract is guaranteed, you know, plus the number of years of those sanctions. But we said that if you think you can find the right guy, and I don't think they did, right, personally, to find that guy to give a mega contract to. Now, I've not seen the Josh Heupel contract here, but I'm going to be very interested in what the buyout is for Heupel at Tennessee. Danny White is known as somebody who puts big time buyouts on all of his coaches and had one himself, right? He backs it up with, he puts his money where his mouth is. But to me, Josh Heupel, at the minimum, I'm okay with the hire for this reason. You can do what Arkansas did this year, which is basically run the Art Briles offense. You won't have a great defense, probably because of the talent they're going to have and the attrition that they're going to suffer. Fans like offense. They'll stay interested in the program at least until the new coach smell wears off. Hopefully by that time, you can figure out where you are with the sanctions and scholarship losses if those do come. And that's why I'm interested in the buyout. Are they going to put such a huge Danny White signature style buyout on him that makes it tough for them to move on in 3 or 4 years? Or do you think this is just more of a Band-Aid hire? Because I kind of wonder, like, this could be both successful and a potential Band-Aid you could rip off with minimal, you know, buyout type damage.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations where I think there are reasons to be optimistic about the hire, and I think there are reasons to be pessimistic about the hire if you're a Tennessee fan, and I think they're all pretty reasonable stances to take depending on how you want to look. Because if you want to be optimistic, you point to the fact that Danny White has done an excellent job of hiring coaches at every place he's been, and there's the familiarity with Heupel from hiring him at UCF. But you could also point out that, you know, at UCF, they went undefeated under Scott Frost. And then after a one loss season in Heupel's first year, they've regressed every season since. But I don't know if that's Heupel or if that's just a natural regression in that UCF isn't Alabama. You can't expect it to go undefeated and only have one loss every single season. I think, like Bud, you just mentioned, you know, your offense is going to be good. And I feel like I can't help but believe had Josh Heupel been the coach at Tennessee this year, Jarrett Guarantano would have had a much better season than he did under Jeremy Pruitt. Because I just think that he's proven he could take quarterbacks who might not be four-star, you know, five-star elite kind of talent, maybe mid three-star level players. And he's able to get production out of him in his offense. So I think at the very least, you're looking at that. I think that you do need to find a good defensive coordinator. And I always, when it comes to like group of five teams, maybe UCF is different because it recruited at a different level than the rest of the AAC. Like until this year, it pretty much had been like the number one or number two class in the conference the last few years. But I always feel like it's much more difficult to field an excellent defense at the group of five level simply because most of the better players, like when you get the quote unquote athletes that don't really have a set position, maybe they're a wide receiver, maybe they're a corner in the group of five, you typically put them on the offensive side of the ball because you're going to have to score points. So I don't know if I want to really hold that against him at UCF, but you do see a lot with the style of offenses that they run. The defenses, I don't know if you guys heard that, the defenses kind of, you know, suffer for the offensive part in that kind of offense. So I think you're going to have to make a solid defensive hire to keep that side of the ball going. But it's one of those situations where I'm not knocked out by it, but I think it's a solid hire. And I think that maybe Danny White went and swung for the fences with James Franklin. And obviously that didn't happen. And I think it's unfortunate if he did that, if that happened, the news kind of leaked out in some areas, because that does get Tennessee fans sitting there thinking, ooh, we're going to get James Franklin. And I think Josh Heupel is a perfectly good hire.
So, Danny, or excuse me, Tom, one thing we do know is that defensive recruiting rankings correlate much more strongly with defensive performance than offenses do, right? You can coach your way, especially in college football, around average offensive talent if you are a creative schemer, if you're willing to take advantage of the rules and the hash marks and whatnot. Defensively, it's height, weight, speed, and hustle, man. Mm-hmm. And like you either got dudes who can run or you can't. It's harder to trick people on defense. So you're exactly right about that.
the I look at this as a high floor hire. Is that fair? Like I don't think that there's I don't think that there's going to be a bottoming out. I think Josh Heupel has been good enough, but I also think that there's a limited ceiling. I don't think that Josh Heupel immediately is going to be the coach that I feel confident is number one going to be able to pitch any of those players that are going to leave. They're like, Hey, don't, I know you're in the transfer portal, but stick around because you know, we can be a quick fix. It's not going to be a home run. That's going to be able to woo Henry Toto back to be able to come play. He's like, no, I only have 1 year of eligibility. Then I'm off to the NFL. Not 1 year of eligibility, 1 year. Then I'm NFL draft eligible. I'd like to go spend it at a team that's not going to be sorry. Like those players that are leaving because they don't want to be around for what's going to be a little bit of a rebuild. Like that, Josh Heupel is a long term. He's a bring stability. He's a you know, be a little bit of a Band-Aid. I think he's high floor. I offer him respect based on what he's been able to do at UCF. But there's one thing that stands out, and it popped up when I was doing my research for the bowl game against BYU, which, by the way, not a great last game for Josh Heupel. BYU kind of won that game very handily, especially for the UCF defensive side. Now, there was a ton of opt-outs. Ton of opt-outs for UCF all year. I'm willing to be able to grant that. UCF is 2-7 in one-score games. Is that bad luck, or is that something that is reflecting poorly on a coach who, when he goes into a contest, is either able to overwhelm you with his offense, but if it does get a little bit back and forth, if the opponent is going to be able to limit you, then maybe isn't real great with game management, crunch time situations. And in those, you've got two of them to Cincinnati by a combined 6 points, two of them to Tulsa by a combined 11 points in those seven losses in one score games. It was a weird stat that hung out there for me with Josh Heupel, and I don't want to make this the crux of my entire argument on whether it is a good or bad hire. I think it's a fine hire. I think it's a high floor hire. But what is Josh Heupel as a game planner, as a game manager, as somebody who's going to be able to flip that narrative around at Tennessee?
I can't sit here and say I paid super close attention to this. So this is anecdotal more than anything, but watching UCF and seeing those losses, not all of them, but a few of them, I can't sit here and say that those one score losses, like the ones I saw against Cincinnati or the ones I saw against Tulsa, I can't sit here and be like, oh, that was game management. I think it was just, they played close games and lost.
It's such a small sample set. I really am just not willing to go there and say he's a bad coach in one score games. I mean, you've seen coaches who have had wild swings in single score games. I mean, there was a stretch where, you know, Jimbo at Florida State, back when I was running, you know, Florida State site, they were amazing in one score games for like 2 years. And the next 2 years, they were terrible in one score games. And I was saying the whole time, this isn't sustainable. And then on the other end, this isn't sustainable either. I really think you show skill by blowing people out. You show skill by hanging tough with teams that are much better than you. I really think close score games are kind of coin flippy. I mean, there are factors, coaching, kicker, quarterback, that probably have outsized effects in those close games. But for the most part, I don't think there's that much skill in winning them, because nobody shows, like if you look at a coach's winning percentage and you look at a coach's winning percentage of close score games, there's really nobody out there who's that good at doing that above and beyond what they normally do, with the exception of Pat Fitzgerald somehow.
Yeah. And I feel like that's because Pat Fitzgerald designs his team to win by one score.
You know? Yeah. Right. So yeah, like, there are some the games goal. That are rushing to probably blow their opponent out that they purposely played down, which I think inflates their, yeah. On my old podcast Ain't Played Nobody, which is no longer around, we had this theory: you can't be bad and boring, right? And I think Tennessee might be bad for a couple of years, but I don't think it'll be boring. They're going to run, you know, kind of the Art Briles style offense here that Heupel runs, where you're putting the receivers out, you know, spitting on the sidelines width. And I think that they will keep fan interest just from chucking the ball over the yard and being wild, which, by the way, man, what a change for the SEC. Mm-hmm. Think about all the air raid tree coaches who are now in the SEC. Mike Leach, Kiffin's not totally air raid tree, but he certainly has some of that, you know, Briles, influence on him there. Arkansas is, you know, that tree now. Tennessee is now. I'm sure I'm missing at least one or two. That's pretty wild.
Well, and are you counting like what we don't know what LSU, whether they want to continue to throw it around, but they certainly should have the wide receiver talent to be able to continue to do that if they want to do it. What are your UCF people telling you, bud?
So my local like neighborhood group chat lit up. They were happy. Now I think they're kind of nuts personally. Like they're really happy to get the buyout and they think that Heupel underachieved because of what Frost was able to do, I think. And I'm trying to tell them like, guys, it ain't easy to keep going, you know, 0-1 or 2 in the loss column. But I thought Ralph Russo of the AP put it right. And he said, look, as long as UCF is still in Orlando, they're going to be fine. They're going to get $6 million combined out of these two buyouts. And UCF is now a job that, you know, two coaches in a row have proven that you can use it to springboard yourself to a major Power Five job if you want to do so. I think they'll be fine. I thought Godfrey had a good tweet too. I don't know if you guys follow Stephen Godfrey on Twitter. He said, what's the working relationship like when you've been hired twice at two different companies by the same boss who both times thought you were maybe the fourth most qualified candidate for the job? Because if you recall, Heupel was not the top guy at UCF either. They wanted Kevin Sumlin and they wanted at least two other guys that leaked out.
Well, I mean, it's like when they call Danny for HQ and he can't do it and then they call me. I mean, you know, it's just like well,
but you keep showing
I'm
up.
Here. Yeah, I'm going to keep showing up and I'm going to try to do the best thing that I can do. Danny, what are some of your like the burning questions that are around this for you?
So I think for me, the biggest question has nothing to do with Josh Heupel. It's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. It's what is the NCAA going to do? Like we're talking about expectations. What do we think Josh Heupel is going to do? A lot of that is going to be impacted with how hard the NCAA comes down, scholarship reductions, like we're hearing these rumors of bag men with McDonald's bags. And all. Is it, if it's, you know, if it's as serious as people make it out, like how much is that going to prohibit the program? That probably is the bit. If I was a Tennessee fan, I'd be way more worried about that than Josh Heupel, like just instant reaction. I am curious to see what the offense does using this hyper fast pace that they go, you know, everybody goes no huddle, everybody goes tempo, but they've kind of really, really tried to take it to a whole nother level. I don't know if it works quite as well as it used to, but even saying that, I mean, they were fifth in total offense his first year, second and third in the last couple of years. So they have been an offensive juggernaut, but he's had really good quarterback play. I mean, Dylan Gabriel has been phenomenal. Mackenzie Milton, who he inherited, was pretty good before that. Like, who the heck? Like, to me, we talk about the coaches all the time. You've got to get the talent. It's a talent acquisition business. You've got to get the players in there. And Coke actually sent us something pretty interesting about UCF's recruiting rankings just within the American Conference under Josh Heupel. So they were first in 2017, second in 2018, first in 2019, seventh in 2020, fourth in 2021. So they're solid, but this is all in Tennessee this past year of Jeremy Pruitt. Of course, they're handing bags of cash. They better be doing pretty well, but they've got to be able to compete with Georgia and Florida and all the other teams in not only the East, but in the West to even think about coming back. But I would say this is going to take a while. And I totally agree with Bud. Like, I think it'll be entertaining. I think they'll put out a product on the field, but I think it's going to be a lot of people making fun of Tennessee with the dumpster fire meme, like, you know, the garbage can rolling down the street in the rain and the storm early. And I just wonder how much the Tennessee fan base can endure before they're ready to jump ship again. Like, it's kind of the cycle that they're in.
How about two big SEC jobs? Obviously the Auburn search went on for a long time, both hire top tier group of five coaches. And both of those group of five coaches, shout out to David Cobb for pointing this out, both those group of five coaches inherited a situation that was really good. Now, granted, both those group of five coaches, I'm talking about Brian Harsin and Josh Heupel, did end up winning more than 75% of their games. Brian Harsin, larger sample size than Josh Heupel. But it is, like, for all of the craziness that I might expect from a coaching search, especially in the SEC, especially sort of in this era, like, in that kind of standard, you go and you find whoever is the most successful coach, and it's like, all right, here, we're gonna let you level up. And maybe that is, as y'all mentioned, maybe that's because you've got all these other sort of big fish that said no, or you've got, you know, financial reasons where you're not going to be able to match what James Franklin is making at Penn State right now. Or another head coach might have even higher demands given the situation that Tennessee is in. Or, you know, maybe you're Billy Napier and you're like, no, Auburn, I'm not going to put together the exact coaching staff if you try to put this together in my coaching contract. But that's like it's a pretty standard issue college football story. Top group of five coach gets an opportunity in the SEC. We're not totally sure about the fit, especially with Brian Harsin, but we're like, hey, you know what? Could be okay. We'll see.
Another interesting aspect of that is, like we've seen with UCF and Bud's, you know, local group chat, and you just kind of see on the message boards, Boise State fans were kind of okay with losing Harsin too. It's like Harsin, I think longer, obviously, but two successful coaches at group of five spots among fan bases who are kind of starting to take for granted that their teams win consistently and just think, you can plug anybody in and we'll be fine. So let's move on.
So in that sense, like, good for Harsin and Heupel, right? Like, you just, even if this does end up being one contract jobs for both of them, you got in the SEC, you know, you'll get your crack at it and you'll be able to go and flex your chops instead of necessarily wearing out your welcome at a place where you've got potentially unrealistic expectations.
Sorry, go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say, here's one thing that it just dawned on me when you were last talking, Bud, about how, you know, Scott Frost went to Nebraska, now Josh Heupel's going to Tennessee. It's like, oh, wait, Nebraska and Tennessee are the exact same program. So UCF is just churning coaches out and sending them to former 90s powers looking to relive their glory days. So whoever UCF hires next is probably going to win the conference a couple times, spend 3 or 4 years there, and then end up at Michigan.
I like that.
Quickly on the because Danny brought up the point about pace, which I think is an interesting one. UCF was number two in the country in adjusted pace. Number three was Ole Miss. Mm. Number six was Arkansas. So, like, we're already seeing that now. I mean, granted, those weren't Ole Miss was pretty good. Arkansas's offense was just fast. They weren't actually good, yeah, but they did put up, you know, some points. I think this is something that is okay to do in this league now. I mean, you may not win a title doing it if you have Tennessee, Ole Miss, or Arkansas level talent. But I agree with Danny too, that I think it's not going to take people by surprise quite as much because you already have other programs doing this.
The Randy Shannon interim head coach just overseeing the program with what I'm sure is going to be a skeleton staff. Josh Heupel going to be working quickly to try and assemble his staff at Tennessee. We'll have some more shifting pieces there. We're sitting here recording, news broke within the last hours or so. Any idea about what UCF does here?
I just think, I don't know if this is what they'll do, but there's a part of me that kind of wants them to hire Tony Elliott, because then the UCF-USF rivalry becomes Tony Elliott versus Jeff Scott.
I like
which
that.
I think could be fun.
Yeah.
Do you think Tony Elliott would take UCF?
No.
No.
I don't either.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think he's probably holding out for a Power Five head coaching job, right?
Yeah, I think he'll be an ACC or SEC coach at some point in the next couple of years here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Maybe Jeff Lebby, right? Was at UCF, keeps that offensive continuity that their fans love, that system. Perhaps could be worth a look.
He is the OC at Ole Miss right now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then, yeah, that would just be right there. Just keep it in the family, keep all the skill position talent, try to have 600 yards per game, 50 points, and overwhelm your opponents.
Here's a hypothetical. We saw Houston do it, but it was a different situation, obviously. But UCF has had such success as a group of five program and being one of the premier group of five schools in the country. Is UCF, depending again on who they hire as their AD, I feel like if Danny White were still there, it'd be much more likely, but are they capable of poaching a current Power Five head coach?
I would say only if that Power Five head coach thinks he's going to be fired and is looking for a soft landing.
I mean, why do we keep doing this? I don't know if there's any Hokie fans that have been dialed in, but like, that would be the Justin Fuente exit.
He knows the league. He was at Memphis.
He would be able to get out of there. We'll see. A lot to keep tabs on. Again,
Tom Herman. He knows the league too.
Yeah,
he
that does. Could be interesting.
That could be awesome.
I was also thinking Gus Malzahn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Does it, man? Gus is so good on TV. They trotted Gus out there for like every big Alabama playoff game because he was always able to come in there and be a, and just give you the full Alabama scouting report. He's good on television. I figured he'd be counting buyout money and whatever the TV people were going to give him, but. If he's trying to get back into it, there is for a Tom Herman, for a Gus Malzahn, for a coach who is looking for a soft landing in a good situation. You're absolutely right, right there. There will be a lot to keep an eye on. He is Danny Cannell. You can follow him on Twitter at Danny Cannell. You can follow him at Bud Elliott. You can follow him at Tom Fornelli. A couple things coming up later this week. We will have your national signing day storylines. What to keep an eye on as we count down. 1 week from today until the recruiting cycle finally wraps up. Also, we will have a mailbag coming later in the week. A reminder, the way that you can submit questions for the mailbag is you can first go and give us a 5-star rating and a review. In that review, put your mailbag question. We will pull them all together, select some of our favorite ones for the mailbag. Also, we will solicit questions on Twitter. You can follow us at Cover3Podcast and be able to look for when we ask for them. You reply. We will also get them there. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See ya.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.